Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Old School coming live from Studio 76 here in Valrico, Florida. It's good to have you back tonight. I know it's been a week. I think it's been a week. Has it been 2 weeks? Hell, I've lost track of what day it is, to be honest, guys. So I got to start this with what's called a mea culpa. I've been doing a lot of those as of late. Real life has gotten in the way of many, many things. And one of those things is the actual broadcast of this program, which is clearly unacceptable. But in the off season, we take a little bit of time off and we do these things. Work for me this quarter is going to be crazy, guys. So you're going to have to deal with a crazy schedule. So I do hope that you can deal with that. If you're listening to us on the podcast, it doesn't mean shit to you because you get it anyway. My man, Gothic Football. I swear to God, I got the biggest fan in the world in that guy, which is awesome. It's humbling. I love how excited he is every time we do a show. So that certainly keeps things going. I want to start the show off. Normally, I start off with a bunch of notes and thanks to our sponsors and all those sorts of things, but I want to start off with something real life related. Those of you who know us closely also know that we are very tightly tied to one of the Gasparilla crews, Crew of Blackbeard's Revenge. We talk about them all the time. They are very much a sister crew of ours. We have a very deep relationship with those guys, as we'd like to believe they have with us. And one of the members of that crew, Dave Flash Morgan, who's also a DJ here on Q105, and a hell of a nice guy, dealt with one of a parent's worst nightmare. He lost his daughter to what appears to be foul play, and her husband, I believe, or boyfriend, I don't know which one it was. I'm sorry, I've got the information here, but it's up on the website. This sucks. There's no way to make this not suck. There's no words, there's no sentiment, there's no expressions that can make Dave's battle any better. But for those of you who are parents, hug your kids a little tighter tonight because you never know when they could be taken from you. If you'd like to assist Dave, one of the members of the crew has set up a Give Forward campaign for it, giveforward.com, fundraiser. Spent will probably drop it in the chat room for you. You can also, if you don't have the ability or the interest to donate funds for this to pay for the memorial services, you can also just drop by. I think it's under the Give a Hug section. Let them know you're thinking of them. So a special note to Dave Flash Morgan in his time of need, to be quite honest. So at any rate, I wanted to make sure he said that first. And Crew of Blackbeard's Revenge has been predictably amazing in response to this, as have a lot of people. So thanks to everyone who's done that. That's amazing. And I see that Buck for Life actually just dropped it over there. It's the Chelsea Sizemore Memorial Fund. It's in our chat room. If you listen to the podcast, I will make sure that URL gets into the web link along with the podcast. That being said, big shout out to Crew Blackbeard's Revenge, once again showing what a class operation that they are. With regards to class, you guys also know that we've been doing a jeans drive. Spent in the What the Buck Really Matters group have been doing a jeans drive. And when I say the What the Buck Really Matters group, I want to make sure that I explain this very well because I think there's become some confusion. What the Buck is sort of the parent brand. What the Buck is our brand. It's who we are. It's what we do. It's our own merry band of crazy people, some of them really well-informed. Some of them not so well-informed, but really passionate. Some combination of that matrix. I always joke around and say that I gave us a voice, but Spent gave us a heart. The charitable stuff that Spent started to really take hold of created What the Buck Really Matters, right? And I give all credit to that, to her urging, right? But since then, what it's done is it's given an avenue for many of us to do things that we didn't think we were capable of. And that's really been amazing. And that's why I say it's got a life of its own. And sometimes they're huge things. They're big charity drives at the tailgates or huge collections or whatever the case may be. And sometimes they're small things. We do a lot of things through DoSomething.org, and one of them is this jeans drive. So if you are going to donate jeans, make sure you get them to Spent. Let her know that you've got them. I know we've got people roaming around that can pick them up as well. We can make sure that we get hold of the jeans so they get donated to the charity as appropriate. I will probably be at our sponsor, Wing House, who I will give some credit to as well here in a moment, tomorrow night, because I feel like going out, and I haven't been to Wing House in weeks. So I feel like I've missed something. So if you want to meet up out there, grab a beer or something, I'll be able to pick up your jeans there and get them to Spent as well. Wing House, thank you for all that you do. Those guys are amazing. I want to send a big shout-out to Whiskey Willie's, providing our liquor during the tailgate season. Wally over there does a great job. Ybor City Chiropractic Ertz over there does a great job. Anywhere Transportation and Buccaneer Beads. Gasparilla season means the parades. We know that KBR has done a great job at his parade. We know that Buccaneer Beads float has looked amazing as well. John Amato and their crew has been phenomenal. They always are. Black Ops Flavor, and then Steakhouse Elite as well. Thanks to all those guys, our sponsors who make things possible. We always give credit to a couple of people that we really, really like who do articles and produce content. Of course, Sandra P. at Bucks Nation, Leo at the Pewter Plank, Pewter Report, and JoeBucksFan.com. And we have another one who actually writes for Bucks Nation, our man Gurr Samuel, who goes by Fred the Gurr on Twitter, on the Twitter machine, as one of our local radio personalities say. I think that's Drew Garabo. At any rate, he's actually going to be our special guest tonight. He'll be calling in via the Skype line probably about 9:30 tonight. We're going to talk about the quarterback position. We'll also talk a little bit about the offensive line. You know, he's got the pulling lineman and a number of other things where he writes. I don't want to skip ahead. I want to let him talk to you about those when he gets on the call. But what I want to talk about is going into this next season, we've got to look at where the holes are. And it's interesting because there's a wide expanse of opinion about how many holes we have to fill on this team. Depending on who you speak to, we're a couple little key pieces away from making a playoff run, or we're, you know, 37 players away from being even mediocre. One of the critical pieces is always going to be quarterback, and there's always going to be contention around quarterback, and this is a quarterback-rich-ish draft. When are you going to get on Stitcher, old school? I don't know what Stitcher is, Callie. I feel so old and out of touch when I don't know what the fuck something is when it comes to computers. My God. So I'll wait for Callie to update me in the chat room on what that is, and I'll let you guys know on the broadcast as well. But we will talk about quarterback because Mike Glennon was the bet of the previous regime. There are some that love what Mike did. He certainly put up good stats for a rookie, and given the situation he had with regards to the pass protection, which was at best sketchy, and the running game, which had sort of disappeared once people figured out the way we were given Iranian opportunity to get out. Is Glennon the right pick? Do we have to go with a free agent? Are we going to look at one of the rookie quarterbacks? Who will fall to us at 7? Would we move to try and get one of these guys? I mean, Blake Bortles, you know, and I'm a big UCF guy. Not really. I went to UCF, but Blake Bortles is skyrocketing. And to be honest, as much as I like UCF and I think he did well, I don't see him as the number one overall pick, which is where he's starting to slot up from some people. But we'll talk about that all when we get Gurr on. But there were some other little things that went on since last we spoke. And Cali Buck Fan says it's like iTunes for podcasts. I imagine all I have to do is just dump my feed into Stitcher, which I can certainly do. The RSS feed for our podcast, for anyone who's trying to get the podcast, you can get it from our website at whatthebuck.net. I think it's actually whatthebuck.net/RSS. But I will check out Stitcher for you if that will make things easier for folks to get our podcast. A couple of little things. We had a Super Bowl. You know, it was going to be a great game. Everyone was talking about it. It's going to be the battle of the defense versus the offense, the great high-powered offense by Peyton Manning and the Broncos versus the high-powered defense of Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks. And interesting enough, it turned out to be an ass-whipping. Buck for Life says they've got him at 8 today. It depends on which mock you're talking about. So the they had them is tough because everyone and their brother has a mock draft. And I've seen him anywhere from 1 to mid-round, which is interesting about Blake Bortles. Anyway, transition back to that. But the Super Bowl was much ado about nothing. Now, I know a group of our friends were up there at the Stadium Club having a good time with the Bucks organization, which was tremendous. I also know that I was not there. No offense to the Bucks Club, and certainly not to those fine people, because I had hung out with them, I think, the week before. But I just sat home and watched it at home. And to be honest, it reminded me of the way I like football. When we were going into the championship weekend, we talked about the stark differences between the NFC football and AFC football, in my opinion anyway. The AFC was all about finesse, offense, all these flag football bullshit, in my opinion. I don't like it. The NFC was a bunch of bust-you-in-the-mouth football, which I love, right? I don't love the Seattle Seahawks. I did not want the Seattle Seahawks to win. I don't really care for the Broncos, but they were the lesser of two evils. So I was one angry son of a bitch during this game because they just got a mud hole stomped in them at every corner. Seattle's defense was absolutely intimidating to that team. And, of course, the debate will spawn. Are they the best defense ever? There was actually a poll, I think, on ESPN.com. Our Bucks defense is in that rating as well. And in fact, in that poll, I think that based on fans' responses, we ended up number 3 on average behind Seattle and the Ravens defense from 2000. No, it was Bears 86, Ravens. That's what it was. Yeah. So at any rate, that defense really was stout. But what I'm surprised by is there's been a lot of talk about how this defense is changing the way defense is played. And to be honest, I didn't see it. Maybe you guys did. Right? Maybe you guys saw something that was redefining defense. I didn't. I saw aggressive defense, a lot of press. I saw a lot of single deep. I saw a smart defense that hits hard and pushes the edge of the rules. Figures they're not possibly going to call as many defensive penalties as they should, because if they did, the game would never end. So they'll get away with a number of illegal contacts and holds and things like that. And like I said before, as a coach, that's your job, is to determine what you can get away with and try and push to the edge of those rules. That's not talking about personal fouls. That's talking about contact that happens on every freaking play. But, and all the talk leading up to it was Richard Sherman because of the shenanigans that happened beforehand and his claims of being the best cornerback in the league. None of that was really an issue. The guy that stuck out for me the week before and it kind of popped on film that no one really was talking that much about, at least I didn't hear him talk about, that I have a huge man crush on now, and I just hope that we can have someone play the way he played, is Cam Chancellor. Because this son of a bitch, there are guys on the FBI's most wanted list right now that are afraid Cam Chancellor knows where they're at, and he's going to come hit them. Now, what's interesting is Deshaun Goldson plays a similar style of intimidation, but he doesn't seem as physically intimidating. And I don't know, because I don't really, because I wasn't paying attention. I know Cam's a big cat. I don't get the feeling that Deshaun's as big. Someone can look up the data. I get the feeling Deshaun's a smaller guy. But the thing that Cam is able to do is every time he hits someone in their spleen or their liver or wherever he targets, he doesn't get a fucking penalty. He still brutalizes them. He absolutely brutalizes them. I absolutely, and Kurt Creel in the chat room says that Chancellor should have been MVP. Absolutely. We had a discussion with Skip Brown on Facebook during the game because he thought Percy Harvin would be the MVP. And I could see that. I mean, I immediately said no because I don't like Percy Harvin that much. But I mean, I saw what he was saying with the return and the yards on the ground on that stupid speed option that apparently was too hard for Denver to figure out because setting an edge is really fucking complicated. But the defense of the Seattle Seahawks was the difference. And when I look at that defense, if I have to pick one guy, because there was a bunch of them that played great. In fact, the guys, you know, it's hard to pick one on a defense. But when I look at what Cam Chancellor did, I think he makes that thing go. You know, I really do. So I definitely want to see that kind of defense. And I'm not saying the scheme. I don't care about the scheme. That's not what I'm talking about. That intensity. Every one of those plays was violent. Just Kirk says it never worked for Aurelius Ben. Yeah. Aurelius Ben can't run the way Percy Harvin can. Not to mention, we didn't run it out of a spread set. So the read option, the read on the edge wasn't even in it. Our offense was just such fucking shit back then. It didn't matter. Calico Jack, always the devil's advocate, which I enjoy, says that Chancellor did disappear a little after he got nicked. I didn't notice that, but I could still have been having my dream fantasies of him playing for the Bucs, and you know, we were walking on the beach and that sort of thing. I don't know. But it's certainly possible. But the guy is just an absolute man beast. At any rate, long story short, and I think someone already said this, Peyton's hand signals and shenanigans did fuck all. His receivers were completely scared, except for, I think, Wes Welker, who didn't seem scared of anybody. He just couldn't get the ball enough. Demaryius Thomas got numbers but didn't really do anything. It was absolutely horrible. And as a Super Bowl, it was boring. The commercials sucked, but boy, that halftime show was good. Bruno Mars can sure put on a show, I'll tell you that. So, anyway, I don't know what you guys thought about the Super Bowl. I watched it. I didn't really care. I was disappointed when Seattle won because I don't like Seattle. I would want it to end in a 0-0 tie, and people just didn't give a shit, but it didn't. Most importantly, the game is now over. And we can get on to the next year where we have a chance to win the game. So, another little piece of news that has happened since last we spake, as I mentioned earlier, is we are now no longer represented by only two Buccaneer players in the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame vote was cast. And while we had three folks that were up for it into the finalists, Coach Dungy, John Lynch, and Derek Brooks was the man that he was, right? And this is one of those things that I'd love to get your opinions in the chat room, and you guys who listen to the podcast, please do post your comments on our Facebook page on facebook.com/whatthebuck. There is a really healthy debate about who the best Buccaneer ever really was. And I think some people are afraid to weigh in against Leroy Selman because of him, you know, being passed away and because of his storied history with the Buccaneers and great guy off the field and all those sorts of things. What it is interesting, though, is even though you may have loved Warren Sapp on the field, and Pat Jesenkis, who I don't really like often in his writing, said this. Yeah, I'm a Brooks Man in the Hall of Fame. I love it, Buck for life. Sarcasm. Hey, look, Mike Glennon's here. That's good to have you here, Mike. I'm glad you're here for the show. And I will attack B. Shuck and Just Gurr for saying that Bruno Mars is just Prince in a second. But that's fine. Not a lot of folks were ecstatic about Warren as a person going in. Now, I loved it. I had a great time. Pardon me, folks. I have to sneeze, I think. But Derek Brooks is sort of universally loved. And so I would definitely love to hear your impact about whether, or your input about whether you think Derek Brooks is the best Buccaneer ever. And we'll talk about that some. But some of the stats that were put out on various news feeds, in a 14-year career, he never missed a game. He started all but three games. There were a couple games towards the end he probably shouldn't have started, but it doesn't matter. In 97, he led us to our first postseason appearance since 81. 11-time Pro Bowler, 6-time All-Pro, 2002 Defensive Player of the Year, 44-yard interception return to win, or in the win, in the Super Bowl, which we all remember. It's hard to keep them apart because there were so many interceptions. And then the All-Decade team for the 2000s. This guy was amazing. Now, I heard Scott Reynolds from Pewter Report on 98.7 The Fan the other day say that he believed that if Derek Brooks... if Derek Brooks had been in a system like what Lawrence Taylor had been, and he could have had more sacks than even Lawrence Taylor because of his physical attributes. But because the Buccaneers saw something different and they used him in a different scheme, that's not what he got. It's interesting because Scott fully believes that Derek Brooks is the best linebacker of all time. So it's very interesting. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to Canton. I've gone the last 2 years. I can't say I'm going to go every year, but I plan on going back, and I'm definitely going this year to see Derek get in. If you have investigated that trip, you'll realize a couple of things. One, it is absolutely expensive to go to the Hall of Fame weekend. Nothing there is cheap. I'll tell you a couple of things about it. Hotels up there suck. They're all expensive. None of them are proximal to the Hall of Fame. Canton is a shithole. The actual Hall of Fame is cool. Don't take anything away from it, right? Going to see the game that's played, it doesn't matter who's playing, is fun because you're seeing them play in a high school stadium. They're very close. It's a really neat sort of intimate feel. The actual Hall of Fame ceremony is phenomenal. Get floor seats. Don't be an asshole. Get down there. Get in the mix. You'll see 100 players and coaches that you want to see. If you can make the trip, it's worth it. I know it sounds like a whole lot of money, and it is a whole lot of money, but it's very, very cool to do. If you're interested in where we are, we're out in Dover. The PFUFA folks stay out there at the Comfort Inn. There's also a Country Inn right across the little water from there. But yeah, I mean, we're way the fuck out in the middle of nowhere in a relatively shitty hotel, and I think it's $170 a night for those rooms. So it is not inexpensive, but it is a great, great trip if you get a chance to do that. Now, that's the scoop on that, and we can continue to talk about that at our leisure. But back to this Bruno Mars thing. Fuck you guys that say he's just Prince. They're sold out. Oh, the Comfort Inn's already sold out. Yeah. So, and I expect to see a lot of that. Spent just told me they're already sold out. So as you go check, I know Pat Donovan got a Red Roof Inn somewhere, so you have to definitely check that out. But at any rate, there are going to be similarities in performance, right? I thought Bruno Mars had that Motown feel to him. Definitely you can pull similarities between Michael Jackson and Prince because there are similarities. But their songs don't sound the same. Tonally, they can be the same, but that's like saying all grunge music sounds the same or all rock and roll sounds the same. It's just, in my opinion, a dumb argument. If you've never been to the Hall of Fame, go, just not on induction weekend. So Axe brings up a good point. That's the other thing you can do, is not on induction weekend, you can go up there. It's probably really inexpensive to go because no one in their right mind is there. But one thing I've got to say is I know Matt and the crew that was there, Sizzle and Cheryl, the whole crew that was there last year, when Warren got called up, Bruno's more James Brown than Prince. Nice. Cool, a dumb argument. I like those. I love my chat room. I really do. I love my chat room. And by the way, the phone lines will be open after the GER call. If you guys want to call in and argue with me, you're welcome to do so. The phone number is 813-964-7364. I know it feels as though I just get to bitch at you guys and you don't get to bitch back, but you know that the phone lines are open most of the time. So if at any point I push you guys too far over the edge, you're welcome to call in and counter live. That's always available. GER's not calling until 9:30, so we got 9 minutes if you guys want to weigh in and tell me why Bruno Mars sucked, because I've watched a lot of Super Bowl halftime shows, and with the exception of Naked Breasts, which are awesome, this was the best one I can remember in a long time. I am so sick and tired of seeing age rockers, and when they had the fucking Red Hot Chili Peppers out there, the only thing that saved the Red Hot Chili Peppers was Bruno Mars. You couldn't even save them by having their shit unplugged. And I wasn't calling anyone. Oh, my God. My chat room sometimes seems sensitive, and probably it's because I'm behind as well. I wasn't calling anyone out specifically for any attack on Bruno Mars. Rest assured, I am not his counsel. And it, even if we said he sucked, right? Like, let's say he released a song that really, really sucked. Like, oh, I don't know, anything by the Imagine Dragons. That's not true. I actually like the Imagine Dragons, too. But let's just say it sucked. I'm guessing he could cry himself to sleep on his piles of money. And various and sundry naked women, if you're into that kind of shit. So that would be my guess. So big shout-outs to our chat room. The chat room is hopping for the off-season. This always amazes me that off-season, Thursday night, 9 o'clock, Buckboy hated it. Oh, my God. Oh, it just makes me want to cry sometimes. I just don't understand. I mean, we could always have fucking Eddie Money out there. Is that guy ever going to pass? Eddie Money must be 200 fucking years old. Free Bieber. The chat room. Nice. Speaking of the chat room, Jess Gers over in the chat room, he'll be calling us in at about 9:30 to talk Mike Glennon. So if you have questions about Mike Glennon, realize that Jess Gers had done the sort of throw-by-throw analysis of Glennon when he took over the reins here in Tampa. We're going to be talking about Glennon's role moving forward as the quarterback of the Buccaneers. Is that a position that we have to be concerned about? And deep diving into that position and the sort of trickle-down effect that position has on the rest of the positions on the team. One of the other things I want you guys to think about while I'm talking to GER, and I will put him on the spot and ask him this question, though, by asking in advance, it's not really on the spot. I'd like you all to tell me one offensive starter and one defensive starter from last year who will no longer be with the Buccaneers this year. Vote someone off the island on both sides of the ball. And no, you can't cheat and pick a special team guy, Mike Kanan. So that's the thing I want you to keep. And as we look at draft, it's going to be interesting because you have the eternal debate. Do you reach for your position of need? And what is our position of need? That's really the question at bar is. Or do you go best available? I mean, hell, the Rams are sitting there looking. They might get Jadeveon Clowney, and they've got a great defensive line. How much do you need on pressure? B-Shuck wants to know to who. I don't know whatever. Oh, okay. So Skip Brown in the chat room just said that Glennon will be our backup. And he was asked by B-Shucker to who. And he said, whoever. So that's the essence of what we'll be talking about with regards to quarterback. So in the chat room, as I mentioned, Jess Gers, B-Shuck, Josh Wobbles, Cali Buck Fan, Adam Buckhead Hogue, Buck for Life, Kurt Buckshot, Creel Spent, Christine, Buckboy, Mike Glennon. Mike, again, good to have you here. Hopefully none of this stuff, hopefully you're thick-skinned. If you're an NFL player, you got to be thick-skinned because you're going to get critique from some asshole who lives in Valrico and anyone who sits in his chat room. Where was I? Mike Glennon, Chain, Skip Brown, New Jersey Buck Fan, Calico Buck or Calico Jack, KGH for Life, Axe, and two viewers. Axe, with a musical background, says, the reason for RHC being unplugged is damn near impossible to keep string instruments in tune at around freezing temps, hence the selection of the Bouffant Boy Band. It could be that the Bouffant Boy Band sold a lot of fucking records and has put on one of the best concerts of the last year as well. That may have something to do with it. And I know Red Hot Chili Peppers in the day sold a lot of records. But I do know that we got just enough Red Hot Chili Peppers. Right? Just enough. It's funny that B. Shucker just said this in the chat room, because as always is the case with free agents, there will be a ton of speculation about what quarterback. And Mike Vick's name has already been mentioned, and that will be a lightning rod. Now, Calico Jack's already weighed in with his vote. Donald Penn and Leonard Johnson. Those are the two that he has voted off the island. Cali Buck Fan says Davin, but he didn't give us a defensive player. Now, when we start talking about who those guys are going to be, a lot of that's going to come down to how they play. Kurt Buckshot. Goodness gracious, what the fuck? Kurt Creel weighs in out of left field with say goodbye to Mike Williams and Daquan Bowers. That is stout. And Skip asked a good question. Would Leonard Johnson be considered a starter? I think he was the starting nickel for a period of time. I don't know, though. That's a good question because they shuffled in that position because of all the injuries. That's really an interesting thing. And B. Shucker just said he loves slash hates the offseason. I said that last week. You know, because you guys know I don't like speculation. And that's what the offseason really is all about. It's about speculating about the future, about the current, who's going to be here, who's not going to be here, why are they going to be here, what's the problem with them. All of these sorts of things become what we have to talk about. That's the problem. Buck for Life says, Nix and Bowers. It's funny, a lot of people are picking Daquan Bowers. Now, I know he had a bad season and was injured the year before, but it is very... AJ Clay? Cali Buck fan? Really? No, nothing to be sorry about, Chuck. I love these answers because we're going all over the reservation. All over. But and Cali may be high. You don't know? I mean, it may be legal. Who knows? I don't know where shit's legal. I know that. Did you guys hear? Was it Cromartie? They should just make it legal. We're going to do it anyway. Good call. Good call. I'm sure your agent appreciated that weigh-in. Thanks for voicing that. So some of the other names, and you guys have gotten used to now. No, you haven't. We've only done it twice now. But I say used to because I want to inculcate it or integrate it, rather, into our regular show, the buying or selling segment at the end. The buying or selling segment will be about free agent quarterbacks or rookie quarterbacks coming to the Buccaneers. So think about who these guys are. We'll do buying or selling at the end when we're done with our discussion with Fred the Gurr, or Gurr Samuel, as he is actually officially titled. Yeah. B. Shucker's talking about the interview about weed. I don't understand why guys have to open their mouths. It's just absolutely amazing. Now, before we get Gurr on the phone, obviously the discussion about Hall of Fame wouldn't be complete without the discussion about whether our other two guys were slighted. I don't think that they did. I think that their time wasn't yet. I see there's some reports in the chat room of lost feeds, and I'm going to go ahead and put this out there so that you guys know that we are going to continue to investigate an alternative feed source from Ustream because I've had increased numbers of problems. I do check my connection, and I know you podcast people don't care because you get the quality all the way anyway. But generally speaking, I'm at about a 35x35 connection, so if you're losing feed, my guess is that it's a Ustream problem. I do apologize for it. I also know that people that are having problems with ads have had some success with the ad blockers. Until we change our model and use a different stream, we're kind of just stuck with this. So hopefully here in the offseason, after March, I will be able to work with Kurt Creel and get something better set up. So once we do that, you guys will be set free, and we will have a much more robust streaming solution. So with that being said, Gurr is going to be calling in here in a second. We're going to talk quarterbacks. If you guys have questions about quarterback, if you have an opinion about the quarterback situation in Tampa, I know that Skip Brown has already weighed in and said that Glennon will be the backup to whoever. He probably doesn't mean to Dan Orlovsky, but I think that the sentiment there is that someone will come in and take that spot that he currently has, Creole Kurt. I bet Creole Kurt would work. That'd be a good alter ego for Kurt Creel. But at any rate, I happen to be one of those guys. You guys know that I'm not a big fan of Mike Glennon, not as a person. I mean, he seems like a nice enough kid, and he certainly seems to be smart. I think he did a lot with what he had last year. I don't know that of all the names I have heard to replace him, I'm much happier with any of the other ones. All right, here's Gurr Samuel coming in on the Skype line. Gurr, how you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
I'm doing quite well. Thanks for joining us this evening. We're going to talk about quarterback, as I mentioned. You have the advantage, as opposed to when Mark Cook calls in, you actually participate in the show. I love Mark, but if he wasn't on the show, he wasn't listening to the show. So he doesn't get to hear all the lead, and you did. But I want you to remind people how they can hear about you, where you write, what you do, that sort of things.
Okay, well, mostly you can read me over at Bucks Nation. I'm one of Sanders Motley crew. Also, I have a website which I'm not currently active with, but will probably get reactive with in the off season. The Pulling Lineman, which is pullinglineman.com. I wish I started with two of my old teammates who also played offensive line.
All right. Now, I know you're part of Sanders' crew. I continually try and steal you, but Sander, it is a tribute to his relationship with you and his ethics that this man is still writing for you and not writing for me, because I have thrown 49 virgins at him and he still says no. I had to go out of state to find them, but I did throw them at him. So big kudos to Sander and the things that he does over at Bucks Nation for keeping you there. Now, that being said, and now that I've managed to offend pretty much everyone on the show quickly, we're going to talk about QB tonight. You are working on an article that discusses the comparison of Mike Glennon and Matt Ryan. And now we had someone on Twitter jump in and say, there is no comparison, you know, and it's like, okay, listen, everyone made that comparison. All the coaches talked about it. Everyone talked about it. What are your thoughts? And what's this article really about? Because as I understand it, it doesn't stop at the Matt Ryan comparison.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it began with during the whole season, I've been breaking down pretty much every throw which Mike Glennon has made, called Mike Glennon versus game film. And what one of the frequent kind of accusations, I'll say, leveled at me was, you know, one of my big things with Mike Glennon is his ball placement, which I think is really not great. I think it kills off a lot of yak opportunities. And people kept saying, well, you know, you're saying that this isn't good enough, but have you looked at other quarterbacks? How do you know that they're not just as bad with their ball placement? And, you know, whilst objectively I'll consider it bad ball placement, truth is I hadn't looked at every quarterback across the league to tell whether it was comparatively bad or not. So that's why it's my big kind of off-season project for Bucks Nation is I'm looking at various QBs to see how Glennon stacks up against other QBs in the league rather than a kind of imagined ideal quarterback.
So right now in the chat room, which you may or may not still be watching, you're getting clowned for your accent. You are not from the Central Florida area, correct?
No, slightly to the east.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, I'm London-born and bred.
And yet you probably spend more time watching All-22 film than most folks in the U.S. do. Now, as you watch that film, it's interesting because you're not talking about completions and incompletions. You're not talking about interceptions. You're not talking about the Reader's Digest of stats that most folks use to do an evaluation. You go back and you watch All-22 footage. You watch the way the play develops, which receiver seems to be primary, what receiver seems to be given the opportunity, because a defense is generally going to try and take them some things away from you, force you to choose things you don't want to choose. The quarterback's got to make that assessment, make the decision, then deliver the football. Now, once you deliver the football, it's not just about getting the ball from point A to point B, meaning to contact. Ideally, the great ones give your receivers a chance to get yak or whatever you want to call it, yards after catch. Some people call it run after catch. It doesn't really matter. Now, how hard is that to go back and analyze? What kind of a pain in the ass is that?
It is a lengthy process. You need to kind of play each play back 3 or 4 times to really see exactly what's going on. The big way of telling is by not looking at the quarterback, by looking at the receiver. You can tell when they have to slow down their route, when they have to turn their body in a way they're not expecting. You can see that, and you can sort of, you know, you can never really know because you don't know what the play's called, but you can sort of make a pretty fair guess based on the receiver's reaction to where the ball's delivered compared to where they appear to expect it to be.
Now, what's interesting about that, and the reason I'm going into the detail about this, is because I want folks to understand, a lot of folks have sort of, what's the word for it? They've kind of backlashed, is not the right word, but we'll go with that, on fans or fan analysts, whatever you want to call folks who are not actually paid by a network to do analysis or didn't formally play the game in the NFL and subsequently are considered analysts. When we review film, because we don't know what the play was, and that's an absolutely valid comment. It's hard to determine who fucked up if you don't know what they were supposed to do. That being said, this approach that you're taking really is assessing a receiver, generally speaking, in route. Now, I assume you're not going to take away credit for guys sitting down in a zone and getting delivered the football. You're not going to throw him into motion, right? Because his job is to find the soft spot in the zone, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm talking about more when you can see that a receiver's had to turn a full 180 degrees to catch a ball while still trying to move in the same direction.
Right.
When that happens, that's not a result of them trying to shield the ball from coverage. It's the ball should not be thrown that far behind them.
Right. Now, and when we talk about quarterback position in the NFL, as you watch the quarterbacks ascend, right, from, you know, Hell, we can go all the way back to Pee Wee and through high school, up through college. One of the things we often talk about with rookies, and we started seeing this, it's funny because Mike, when he got his first starts, he didn't do this as much. And that was one of the things that was actually kind of pleasantly surprising. He didn't wait to see it before he threw it. And like if you look at a quarterback like E.J. Manuel, who is absolutely atrocious, he still is in that mode where he has to see someone open to deliver the football. And in the NFL, that's not what you get. An overused phrase is throw him open, which is you're throwing to the intersection point of the route based on your knowledge of the receiver's abilities and the coverage. And that's what allows that yards after catch so that you can catch that ball in stride and then turn the ball upfield. We saw in the Super Bowl Demaryius Thomas getting a lot of shit because he was catching these crossing routes, and he wasn't turning upfield. He was continuing crossing, and in fact, I think once he certainly lost a first down, and another time he almost did. What have you noticed so far in your analysis of Mike Glennon?
Well, the kind of throws you're talking about, Sandy used a phrase once, which I've then repeatedly kept using, is big boy throws. And that is throws which requires anticipation in knowing where your receiver is going to be, finding the open field, you know, the open spot in coverage, and throwing it before the receiver makes his break. And as I say, that is a huge racker of yak, to coin a little rhyme there.
Racker of yak. Nice.
Yeah. And it's frustrating because Mike Glennon will throw those occasionally, but he's never consistent with it. You know, for every one that he hits, he'll completely ignore five or six similar opportunities. And there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason. You know, he could be, it doesn't seem to make a difference whether he's under no pressure or whether he's under a lot of pressure. It doesn't seem to make a difference whether he'll see it or not. I'm not, you know, I can't explain why that is, but I can tell you that there were plenty of touchdowns which we left on the field because Mike Glennon did not make those anticipatory big boy throws.
Now, as you've gone back to compare him, and as I understand it, you're going to compare him to more than just Matt Ryan. It's not just a one-to-one comparison. How much Matt Ryan film have you looked at in comparison to Mike Glennon film?
Right, so because I'm going to be looking at five total quarterbacks. Now, if you've got access to the old 22 through Game Pass or Game Rewind, then you'll know that they've only released the old 22s for 2012 and 2013. Still, I'm not going to look through 32 games for five different quarterbacks. So I've chosen four particular markers for games to look at, which is highest and lowest passer rating, highest completion percentage, and highest yards, or most yards. So those are the four games that I've looked at for Matt Ryan, because it gives you a nice kind of space to judge his total play on.
What have you noticed when you've watched it, or have you got a chance to watch Matt Ryan? I know you've watched the Glennon film. You'll probably have to watch it again to do your comparison, but have you had a chance to go back and watch those four on Matt Ryan from 2013?
Yeah, so it's from 2012 and 2013. So
you've done eight?
Yeah. Sorry?
Did you do eight? Did you do four from each year, or did you do four across the 2 years?
I did four across the 2 years, which actually ended up being two of each. And interestingly, the one with the highest rating was the first time that they played the Bucks this year. It was actually Matt Ryan's career high. So, yeah, that wasn't too great for us. But, yeah, I've had a chance to watch all four games on the All-22. And it's interesting. The reason why I decided to start with Matt Ryan is when Mike Glennon was first drafted, Matt Ryan was a quarterback a lot of people pointed to.
Right.
Is the kind of quarterback Glennon could eventually turn into.
Right.
Obviously, it's not necessarily a fair comparison. This is looking at Matt Ryan as a fifth and sixth year quarterback. I would love to get a rookie film on Matt Ryan, but they don't have any film from 2008, let alone All 22. But it's interesting to see. I can understand why some people make the comparison. Their skill set comes from the same sort of place, you know, but whilst I can see why people would make the comparison, I'm skeptical whether Mike Glennon can ever turn into Matt Ryan.
Why? Yeah, why? I mean,
why?
I mean, right now, so, and I don't mean to play devil's advocate because I actually do honestly disagree with the comparison. The comparison seems to me to be based simply on physical attributes. Just like when people make comments about guys being like John Lynch, what they really mean is it's a white safety that hits hard. And in this case, I think it's a big, lanky, tall, white quarterback who can't move. Right, I that doesn't make him Matt Ryan. That makes him a big, tall, lanky quarterback that can't move. And that doesn't mean he can't be successful. There are a number of those kinds of quarterbacks who are very successful in this league, right? But what I don't understand is when I've watched Matt Ryan, and admittedly, I only see him, you know, usually the two games that they play the Bucs, and I go back and watch before those games a couple of games as well. What I see is the intellect, maybe, because you see Matt Ryan sort of taking control of the offense, et cetera. That seems to be one of the things he's gotten credit for since he's come into the league, is being very bright, being a good field general. But as far as the throws, like Matt Ryan, while, you know, Tony Gonzalez came out, I think Kurt Creel mentioned in the chat room earlier, you know, Tony Gonzalez came out and said that Matt Ryan's not elite. I don't know why Tony Gonzalez would say that. I didn't read the interview. Hopefully it was an in-passing comment that was taken out of context to make a story. But I have seen Matt Ryan make a number of elite throws. And to be honest, I haven't seen Mike Glennon make any elite throws. But you accurately point out rookie season versus now, right?
Yeah, and that is a hard comparison. I mentioned to you, like, in the pre-show when we talked, that whilst I can't see, you know, when Matt Ryan is playing well, he looks nothing like Mike Glennon. When Matt Ryan is subject to a lot of pressure, he looks like Mike Glennon under pressure. And whilst I know that quarterbacks under pressure will react a certain way, it's very similar sort of reaction to pressure in terms of the way how they move in the pocket, which is not the same way that Josh Freeman would move in the pocket, for example, under pressure. So from that extent, I can understand why. I can also tell you that I was surprised to find that Matt Ryan's ball placement is not as good as I thought it was going to be. So, you know, this big issue I had with Mike Glennon turns out is also present in Matt Ryan's game. Nowhere near to the same extent, but, you know, so Matt Ryan might deliver a ball behind the receiver, but it'll be close enough that the receiver doesn't have to noticeably slow down. But was that always the case? Like I say, I can't go back look at the rookie season because I don't have that game tape.
Right.
But it wouldn't surprise me if Matt Ryan, now in his fifth and sixth year, is throwing slightly behind receivers. Was he throwing considerably behind receivers as a rookie?
Well, doesn't that call into question your metric, though? I mean, if you know, I don't think anyone would argue that Matt Ryan's not a good quarterback. Even though the most ardent Bucs fan would say he's a good quarterback, but. Have you gone back and looked at, say, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, to see if they are discernibly different, or if this relatively subjective rating really doesn't have any bearing?
Well, that's the thing. You know, Matt Ryan is the first one that I've looked at in depth. So those two aren't ones who I was planning on, because I see I'm really struggled to see Mike Glennon turning into either of those guys, right, if I'm being honest. But the thing is that, like I said, it's not so much about whether the ball is perfectly on the money. And Matt Ryan, you know, his ball placement isn't always great, but it's still consistently better than Mike Glennon's. But it's more about how does the ball placement affect the route being run. In Matt Ryan's case, a badly delivered ball is still close enough that it's not really affecting the route. Whereas Mike Glennon's balls will force the receiver to noticeably slow down, even having to slide to the ground in order to catch the ball.
Right.
Just because it's bad ball placement, it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, not all bad ball placement is the same.
Right. Now, with this assessment, and then I'll get out of the weeds, because I know that not everyone necessarily cares about the weeds. I do, because this is the kind of article that I would read when you put it out on Bucs Nation. Have you categorized the effectiveness or inefficiency of the targeting so that it's like on a scale of 1 to 5, or are you going through and doing like an actual drawn out analysis of each throw saying this one made the receiver slow down versus turn? Like how are you doing that?
Yeah, it's the latter. It's going to be, you know, the same format that the Mike Glennon versus game film articles were. So it's going to start off with a box chart of literally every single throw from these four games.
Right.
And what happened, you know, I will say, forced receiver to slide, forced receiver to slow, to noticeably slow down, forced receiver to have to jump and therefore end up getting him nailed by safety, that type of thing. I will specifically say what the result of the throw was and how it affected the receiver.
Gotcha.
But, you know, that's not the only kind of comparison I can see between them. You know, they both escape the pocket a lot quicker than you'd think under a lot of pressure. The difference is that, you know, Mike Glennon, and as he got on, you know, he started off as a statue in the pocket and then ended up being the complete opposite. First sign of pressure, he'd kind of flee. Matt Ryan tends to do that when he was pressurized as well. The difference is that Mike Glennon would wait until he was very far out of the pocket with no one near him before he started looking downfield. Matt Ryan might start booting out the pocket at the same time that Mike Glennon would. Difference is Matt Ryan, about three or four steps into his boot, would throw downfield because he's constantly looking downfield.
Right.
It seems to take Mike Glennon a while to get back into look downfield mode.
Right. Well, and I think a lot of that comes with experience. Like you said, you're talking about a guy who's got 5 years under his belt, and you see some of the things that's like phantom pressure and things like that. You see that out of rookie quarterbacks. It has to come with playing time, and really that's the decision point that the Bucs are at. Do they give him the playing time? Do they ride out Glennon for a year and see? Or do they look at what's going on? Now, you've got two hats that you wear primarily. And I just got a note from Kirk Creel that there's an error, no database connection on the website. I'm not sure what that's from, if it's from whatthebuck.com or from the show. I noticed we lost some people from the actual broadcast, so I will check to see what that's all about on the back end. You guys on the podcast, again, don't have to care about that, but I will check that out. And if you are trying to watch it on the website, I'll find out what's going on, but you can always go to Ustream directly and search for What the Buck and find it. There does seem to be a problem with the actual What the Buck website that I will get taken care of. But as a fan of the Bucs, what are your thoughts about Mike Glennon for this coming year? And then as an analyst, what are your thoughts? And are they different?
It's become increasingly hard to distinguish between the two over the past year. The past year I really sort of stepped up, I think, my analysis hat. And it's now the analysis kind of hat informs the fan hat, as it were. So wearing my joint hats, we don't necessarily need to move on from Mike Glennon, but we can't stay still. We've got to get him some kind of competition. You know, I can see where Mike Glennon could develop to being, but it's up in the air whether or not he will. We can't afford to ride with Mike Glennon as he is now, and we can't rely on Jordan Rodgers, who's the only other quarterback on the roster right now. So we've got to find competition somewhere. My preference isn't actually for the draft, because Mike Glennon could develop. You know, no one knows what Tedford's offense is going to look like. No one knows what kind of role he could construct for Glennon. I would much rather go for a veteran who, you know, either Glennon develops and wins the job in camp, or if he doesn't, then at least we can trust the veteran to not mess things up and give someone for Glennon to learn from.
Okay, well, that transitions very well to our next section. And for you guys in the chat room, we've got Gurr Samuel on the phone, Fred the Gurr on Twitter, at Fred the Gurr. What I want to do next is the buying-selling section. And I also want to remind the folks in the chat room that the question was once again asked why we were comparing Mike Glennon to Matt Ryan. This was the comparison given to Mike Glennon. A lot of times when you have a guy coming out in the draft, they will liken him to this player in the NFL that's playing now. And that was one of the ones. Now, that's just the first in what will be a series of five comparisons for Mike Glennon. Now, with the buying-selling, there's free agency and there's draft. Now, the draft people I'm going to name here are the guys that we probably will not get a chance to see. So before we get too excited or animated or pumped up or any of those things, let's not go all Calvin Johnson, be all pissy because we didn't get Calvin Johnson when we didn't have a fucking chance to get him. But we're going to have to put these guys on the list. So, buying or selling Mike Glennon, Gurr, it sounds like you're selling on Mike Glennon.
I am. There's just too many question marks about whether he will develop. He's not flashed enough for me to be confident to say we can go into the season with him without a backup plan.
Okay. Now, that being the case, let's start with the draft. There are the big three. Again, we have to suspend disbelief and pretend for just a second that we would have a snowball's chance in hell of getting any of these three guys. Johnny Manziel. You're on the clock.
I'm going to be...
You're on the clock.
I'd sell.
You're selling
Guns
Johnny.
Guns to my head, I'd sell. Yeah, I can understand. You know, I think he will be an exciting quarterback, but I think, like Mike Vick, I don't know if he's going to be able to stay on the field enough games out the year to be able to really take the team anywhere.
Okay. Obviously, I'm going to go to... And in the chat room, thank you, Buck for Life. You guys are welcome to do that, too. I'd love to get your feedback in the chat room. I know that sometimes when I do interviews, people kind of drift off. Either they're listening and they're so captivated by the interview that they don't get involved in the chat room anymore. Sometimes they actually talk amongst themselves and they find my interviews boring, which I can totally understand. But I'd love to get your take on this in the chat room, buying or selling on Glennon or Manziel. Skip Brown, and we knew this was coming. Skip Brown says, if Manziel's on the board when we draft, he couldn't get the card to the commissioner quick enough. He's not even waiting for the clock. He's folding it into a paper airplane, and he's throwing it at the commissioner, which is interesting. Johnny Football is one of those interesting picks. He's going to be polarizing. A lot of the mocks have him going to Cleveland. I know that may hurt Spence's feelings. But he's one of those guys that it's hard not to be excited watching play. I just wonder if his style of football will translate to this level. That's going to be an interesting thing to see. I actually, if it were the case that he was available, I would probably sell and try and move him. I'm not a huge guy. Calico Jack is in that camp as well. Sandlot doesn't cut it in the NFL, is his comment. Now, UCF alum Blake Bortles.
I think I'd probably sell.
Why is that?
The reason being is that I don't know if he's an upgrade, a considerable upgrade on Mike Glennon now. And I think, like Mike Glennon, too much of his future development, I think, is uncertain. He's not someone who you can see a clear increase and improvement with as you can with some of the other prospects, one of whom I imagine is probably the next person you're going to ask about.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, I don't think he offers enough clear upside over Glennon for me to be particularly happy with us taking him.
Okay. You probably do have the next person correct. It's going to be Teddy Bridgewater.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the Ville.
Him, I would buy. Yeah, I would buy Bridgewater. And he's the only one I would... He's the only one who I believe right now can take this team further than Mike Glennon will. You know, Bortles, Manziel, they've got too many question marks. So I don't know if they can get that many more wins than Glennon, whereas I believe Bridgewater can. We know that this roster is loaded to win now. It is, you know, Vincent Jackson, he's the wrong side of 30 now. He's not going to, you know, be, one of the better receivers forever. So if you're going to win now with a young quarterback, Bridgewater, I think, can get you there more than the others, just because he's dependable and as an offensive coordinator, you want someone who can execute what you ask of them. So as long as they're dependable, as long as they're consistent, you can plan to their strengths. And I think Bridgewater offers you that, whereas the other two don't.
It's interesting. You and I are actually aligned. He's the one that I don't understand why he is not number one on the list for quarterbacks. He's done nothing but perform at a high level. I know people say he doesn't get to face that level of competition out of Louisville, but he certainly faced some great competition, in my opinion. And more importantly, when you hear people talk about him, he's a film rat. He's dedicated. Not to say the other guys aren't, right? But he just seems like he's heading the shoulders above. Let's move to guys. You know, you guys know I'm not a draft guy. That's not my thing. And when you say you're selling on Glennon because after more or less a year of seeing him play in the NFL, you haven't seen enough to bank on him, it would seem odd to go with a guy who you haven't seen play at all at this level. So Bridgewater is probably the only guy that actually flips that bit. Now, we've got three free agents that I'm going to throw out there, and I'm open to other ones that you may have as well. The first one I'm going to say is the one that's galvanizing, Mike Vick.
Right, I'm going to borrow Sanders' line because I think it's very true. Is if you're going to sign Mike Vick, you may as well just draft Johnny Manziel. You know, Manziel would give you almost everything that Vick would offer you, plus youth and without the injury history. The only reason you signed Vick is if you really want Manziel, I think he'll be off the board at 7.
Very, very interesting. So, Mike Vick, you're equating to Johnny Manziel. I'm not a Mike Vick guy. I never have been a Mike Vick guy. He's got a hell of an arm, but I've never liked his decisions in the pocket. He does give you the ability to run spread. The spread variant that I see run in the pros, right? And you see that evolving, right? Really, the only team I think that's still running the spread, sort of the pure spread, is San Francisco with Kaepernick. And he is checking out of the handoff a lot more often than he's running the ball. When he chooses to run the ball, he's fucking freakishly good. But I think he's smart enough to know if he continues to do that, a Cam Chancellor is going to come out and decleat his ass, and his career is going to be over.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other one, Matt Cassel.
I'd probably buy because he's someone who, if Glennon develops in the same way that a lot of his supporters believe he will, he should be able to be out in camp. But if Glennon doesn't develop, then Cassel gives you someone who can you know, he's not going to do fantastic things, but with, if the defense improves like it should, Cassell will be a dependable enough game manager to take the team to at least a winning season. So Cassell, I'd definitely buy because he's genuine competition for Glennon. He's not someone who Glennon's going to beat easily, but he's not someone who will force you, who, you know, is too good to force it to sit Glennon. You can literally just let it play out in camp and start the better quarterback.
Interesting. I think Matt Cassell is roughly the equivalent to most semi-pro football players. I think he was the beneficiary of a good performance, much in the same way old boy from Green Bay was, and then went off and did fuck all. I don't see what people see in him, but that's just my opinion. Another Matt, because Matt's apparently a popular name for quarterbacks, Matt Schaub.
Matt Schaub is I would definitely buy. If he's available for cheap, you know, I wouldn't give up more than a... If we had a third round, I'd say give up a fourth, but because we don't, I wouldn't give up more than a fifth in this year's draft, just because otherwise you're hamstringing yourself too much. But if the Texans would take that, I would jump on that without question. I know that the past 2 years haven't been great, but before that, he was, you know, a very solid starting quarterback in the league. And if he has genuinely declined, then again, he's someone who will push Glennon to at least achieve whatever he's going to be able to achieve. And best case scenario, you give Glennon time to develop on the bench by learning from Matt Schaub, who's had a decent amount of success in the league.
You know, Matt Schaub is one of those guys that I think you could get way cheap, and I think he's going to be available, and I love him. He can make every throw. He's smart. He's always been a team guy. He's got experience at all levels. Do I think he could come in and start and tamp over Mike Glennon? Yeah, I do. Everyone's going to be talking about the pick sixes, but that's not what his career was made up of. So I am buying on Matt Schaub if he was available personally. And that's not because I want to push Mike Glennon out. To be honest, I want to see what he's done in the offseason. I mean, that's the other thing we didn't talk at all about, was what he did in the offseason. But anyway, that's our buying and selling section. We've had some serious problems with the broadcast live tonight, apparently. So we'll make sure we get the podcast up as quickly as possible after this show. I've got my web guy on it. He just texted me back. Our site is having problems, but apparently Ustream is having problems as well, which is extremely strange. But, Gurr, for the folks listening to the podcast, I want to thank you for joining the show tonight. Is there anything you want to tell them on the way out here?
Yeah, there's going to be two things. One is I'm just going to say who the rest quarterbacks in the series are going to be.
Okay.
Two, who are limited quarterbacks but have had success in the league, which are Andy Dalton and Alex Smith, because I think they're more accurate projections for Mike Glennon than Matt Ryan is.
Okay.
And also, in order to be fair, I'm going to look at the 2012 tape only for Andrew Luck and Ryan Tannehill. Tannehill in particular, I think, will be an interesting one, because to see what Tannehill developed from year one to year two could be a more accurate representation of what Glennon could develop into.
Interesting. Now, when do you think you're going to have this article out for people to see on Bucs Nation?
Well, the Matt Ryan ones will probably be a two-part, and they'll both be up next week. And then I'm hoping to basically do another quarterback each week for the next 5 weeks.
Awesome.
The second thing is the question which you asked in the chat room, which offensive and defensive starter I think will not be with the Bucs next year.
Okay.
So they get to throw in my answers. So the one on defense I don't think will be here might be Dakota Watson.
Okay.
And that is going on all the mock drafts I see, which suggests that it could be Khalil Mack, who's the pick at 7, who I could see us using in sort of a Von Miller role. You know, Sam linebacker on first 2 downs and then rush end on 3rd down. I could see him playing that role, and that sort of makes Dakota Watson expendable. Also, I think Jonathan Casillas, and you know, both Casillas and Watson are free agents. They're not going to re-sign both, and I don't know. I think Casillas has been around long enough and is smart enough that he might be the high priority to re-sign. And the one on offense might be a bit surprising. I'm going to say Eric Lorick. Hello.
Okay, Eric Lorick. Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, you're there. Yeah, Lorick, just because I've looked at, you know, you can find floating around on the internet Jeff Tedford's 2004 playbook. He uses quite a lot of fullback, and Lorick, he's too inconsistent. I think if Tedford's going to use quite a bit of fullback, seeing as Lorick's already a free agent, I think they're going to look for someone a bit more consistent. You know, fullbacks you can get pretty easy. And so I just think that, you know, they could probably get a rookie for half the price of a fourth year minimum or fifth year minimum salary. So I think Lauriger might not be back with the team.
You know what's so interesting about that? So for years, and I say this about tight ends all the time, you know that, because I think you can find tight ends anywhere or build them or whatever the hell. I would say the same thing about fullbacks too, except for we've never been able to do it, right? We went out and got, who was the one who got hurt in the car accident? Ask you?
The one who used to be with the Bengals.
Yeah, I can't remember his name now, but he was a really talented guy, gets hurt in a freak car accident. But other than that, we've never had a fullback worth a shit. And before the Mike Allstott crew starts yelling at me, Mike Allstott was never really a fullback. He was a fat tailback or a big tailback. He's never fat. But he never really played the fullback position effectively. He played essentially a dual tailback position. It was almost a rocket formation. And when he did get called on the block, he wasn't particularly good at it. That wasn't his gift. His gift was running. And he was a feature back. We just didn't have the ability to have two feature backs at the time. That said, Eric Lorig was serviceable, has times where he's more than serviceable. We've brought in people to replace this guy. We've never been able to do it. I can remember Jameel Cook. I can remember Darian Barnes. I can remember all these guys. You would think we could just go find one of these guys to play fullback. But for some reason, it seems really complicated, and I don't understand it.
I just think Lorig, the thing is, he does flash, but he's just too inconsistent overall. I think they would try and find someone who's a bit more consistent.
Yeah.
If he wasn't a free agent, that would be one thing. But since he is,
yeah,
I don't think he's necessarily going to be re-signed.
It's going to be very interesting to see the footprint that this team has after this free agency period, because I think there are going to be some shocks. I don't disagree with you on Dakota Watson. I think they've tried to find a way to get him on the field because he has some unique physical abilities. But the question becomes, does the opinion of the mock draft people match the opinion behind the scenes at One Buck Place? Or do they think, no, we can make this guy a more than one down backer, and we don't need to go out there and get these linebackers coming out of college. We're going to go grab another offensive lineman, which is probably an area of bigger need, given the fact that Davin's play has degraded significantly. Carl Nix may, who knows what he's going to do with his injury, and then Donald Penn is not exactly on the right side of the age curve either, and his money curve is going on the upside. So it's going to be interesting to see how that offensive line gets retooled, because to be honest, it's been just a disappointment all the way around, and you're probably more painfully aware than I am.
Yeah, it's been frustrating to say the least. Now, the thing about Donald Penn is that for 90% of snaps, he will be absolutely solid, which is probably a better success rate than a lot of linemen in the league. But when he doesn't, when he fails badly.
Right.
He's a boom or bust type player. There is more boom than bust, but the busts stick easier in the heads, in the memory.
Absolutely.
That's the problem with Penn.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Gurr, thank you very much for calling in. To do a recap, you sold on Glennon, you sold on Vic, you sold on Manziel, you sold on Bortles, you buy on Teddy Bridgewater. Sadly, none of those three guys are going to be available for us on the draft side. You were a buy on Matt Cassel, and you were a buy on Matt Schaub.
Yeah.
And your call on the one offensive starter that will be gone is Eric Lorig, and the defensive starter will be Dakota Watson. So with that being said, if you want to catch Gurr's articles, get out to Bucks Nation. Sanders got him writing there vigorously. He's got this series coming out on the quarterback analysis over the next 5 weeks. You can check that out there. They can also follow you on Twitter, right, at Fred the Gurr.
At Fred the Gurr. And that's Gurr, G-U-R, in case people don't know how to spell Gurr.
No, well, no one knows how to spell it, dude. It's a mystery. It's an enigma. It's like a puzzle wrapped up in a... Yeah, anyway.
You can blame my parents. God knows I do.
I will. And you can tell that when you talk to your counselors. But thank you for joining us. You're coming in from London. What time is it there, by any way?
It is 3:05 in the morning.
3:05 in the morning. That's the kind of dedication this crazy fucker has. He stays up and listens to the show from time to time and drinks enough caffeine to do so. And then actually it would allow me to interview him at 3:05 in the morning. So thank you very much. I definitely appreciate it. We'll get this podcast up directly because we have had everyone had to leave the chat room because apparently not only my site, but Ustream is down as well. I think the internet is coming to a halt. If I see a zombie outside, guys, we're fucked. Thank you, girl. I appreciate it, my friend.
No worries.
All right, take care. All right, to anyone who's listening to this still online, if you got it to work, thank you for holding in there. I'll play our outro. We'll get out of here. We'll get the podcast posted, and we'll let you know this week following us on Facebook.com/WhatTheBuck or at Twitter.com/WhatTheBuck when our showtime will be this coming week. Big shout-out to my boy Nicholas, too. My oldest son turned 8 on Wednesday, and I couldn't be more proud of the young man he's becoming. So if you ever see me and my mini-me running around, tell him happy birthday because we're making a big deal of it, because with his younger brother, Andrew, getting a lot of the attention, I think it's important to give him that attention. So to New School, Nicholas Fournier. Happy, happy birthday to my big boy. With that said, for the whole What the Buck crew, for Gurr, Samuel, I am out of here.
Tampa. Tampa. Bucks. Josh Freeman. Vincent Jackson. Claiborne back. Bowers healthy. Now that being said, George Costanza. Mr. Steve White.
Thank you.
See, now that's some funny shit. Right? It's interesting. The hell was I? Impartial as I'd like to think I am. Here's the thing. So I give zero fucks. Here's the thing. I don't care. Right? Because I give myself credit for being a relatively smart dude. At any rate, the only reason he should go in the game is if Josh is wheeled off on a fucking stretcher. Doug Martin, Mark Barron, Sean Golson, Levante David, with Revis.